Short time back, I was talking to a man who mentioned during the course of our conversation that he still had some questions about the Sabbath. And he said it in a way he was inferring that he still wondered whether it should be kept or not. Now, this came as somewhat of a surprise because he had attended for many, many years, and I would have thought that that question would have been answered a long time ago. Interestingly enough, even after he mentioned that to me, he didn't tell me what any of the questions were. And it to me just indicated, well, he doesn't really, well, I shouldn't say doesn't really care, but he is not interested in, you know, trying to decide one way or the other if he should keep it or not. You know, it'd be terrible to be sitting on the fence like that, I would think. Even if you have proved the Sabbath should be kept, have any of you ever been confronted with something unexpected that maybe came up in your life that caused you to ask yourself, if I do this, will it violate the Sabbath? You know, I think that has happened to all of us at one time or the other. What I'd like to do today is look at some principles that you should use to help guide you or help us to guide ourselves with regard to those types of questions. You know, there are many verses during throughout the Bible that discuss the Sabbath, but we're going to review just a few of the more important ones, the well-known ones, and see what lessons we can derive from them. We'll begin in Genesis 2, verse 11. Genesis 2, verse 11. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God ended his work, which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work, which he had made. So we see here that he had planned his work very well, very precise in his planning, to make sure that it was done in just 6 days so that he could rest on the seventh day. And I think we should look at that basic example and follow his playbook when it comes to our observance of the Sabbath. We should, to the extent it's possible, and maybe in some cases it's not. When you work for someone else, you're obliged to do what they tell you. But within the configurations of the latitude that you may have in doing the job, and to the extent you can do it, you should plan your work week so that by Friday afternoon, mid-Friday afternoon, your work for the week is starting to wind down, so that by the time sunset arrives, you should have completed your work. Now, I know that doesn't always happen. Certainly there are, as I said before, there are things that happen. There's that ox in the ditch that happens to everyone occasionally. But this is the goal. This is what you should attempt to do to the extent you can. Plan your work so by mid Friday afternoon. You know, the 6 days is supposed to be the day of preparation. Obviously, if you're working at another job, you can't use that entire day to prepare. but you make plans that so that the things you're doing are not quite as critical. Maybe you have to address them earlier in the week, but they should start to wind down by sunset on Friday, or should be done by then. If you're self-employed, you should do the same thing. Verse 3, "And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work, which God created and made. And God blessed and sanctified the seventh day." The Hebrew word for blessed, if you look at the definition in Strong's 1288, it's spelled B-A-W-R-A-K, Barak, and it means to kneel. That's what it means, to kneel. Why is that used? Why to kneel? You know, the person or something being blessed usually in the Old Testament was placed at the feet of the one giving the blessing. And many of us over the years have seen these movies that dealt with things happening in the Middle Ages, and the Knights of the Round Table, the Three Musketeers, the people who were active in that capacity at that time. And many of them came before the king to be blessed, and they always knelt. It was a sign of humility. It was also a sign that they were showing honor to the one that was blessing them. And also in the Old Testament, there are numerous examples about the patriarchs blessing their children, especially the firstborn. This blessing was very important. When God blesses something, it indicates that it's very important to him. Not only did God bless the time, he also sanctified it. And when you look at that word, sanctified, Strong's H6942, it's spelled Q-A-D-A-H and pronounced Kadash. In Hebrew, it means to appoint, it means to hallow, to consecrate, to make holy, to prepare or dedicate. God blessed this time and he made it holy. Only he can make something holy. No one else can make this time holy. Man can't, he can't undo it. He can't reverse the process. He can't override it, except by defiling what God has made holy. That's the only way he can affect it or change it. And even then, if man defiles the Sabbath and the time still is holy, regardless of what man may choose to do during that time. He can go out and work. He can go out and seek pleasure or whatever. But that doesn't do anything as far as the Sabbath is concerned. It's still holy time. Turn to Ezekiel 20, verse 19. Ezekiel 20, verse 19. "I am the Eternal, your God. Walk in my statutes and keep my judgments and do them. And hallow my Sabbaths, and they shall be a sign between me and you, that you shall know that I am the Lord, your God." Notwithstanding, the children rebelled against me. They walked not in my statutes, neither kept my judgments to do them, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. He will live his religion. He will keep the Sabbath because he believes in it so much that it's the right thing to do. He will keep the Sabbath in addition to the rest of the commandments that I've given, the rest of the statutes I've given, the rest of the judgments I've given. And he said, they polluted my Sabbaths. Then I said, I will pour out my fury upon them to accomplish my anger against them in the wilderness. Which shows that defiling something made holy by God can trigger severe consequences. And you see examples of that throughout the Old Testament, where nations were punished, where the Israelites were punished for violating the Sabbath. You know, if you think about it, God didn't need to stop what he was doing or rest, because a spirit being never tires or wears out. So why did he rest? He did it intentionally. He rested as an example for all of his human creation. He desired that we would do the same thing, that we would follow his example. We need to keep this time holy as God made it holy, and that provides the basis for how we keep the Sabbath. If you want a template, if you want instructions as to how to keep the Sabbath, that's the thing to look at. You know, if we know it's holy, it must be treated and kept differently than any other day. There are 1,440 minutes in a Sabbath. Each one counts and is important. So we need to be concerned about how every minute is spent. You know, we should be more alert as to how we use or how we spend our time on the Sabbath. Exodus 32, verse 10. Exodus 32, verse 10. Now therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may wax hot against them, and that I may consume them, and I will make of thee a great nation. So here, God was fed up with the Israelites, and when he looked and saw what they were doing, he said, well, forget them. You know, let me just deal with you, Moses, and I will make a great nation out of you. But Moses talked God out of doing that. You know, it's not because they didn't deserve to be destroyed, because they did. They had violated God's Sabbath. They had polluted his Sabbath. They had violated all of his other laws. And if you think about it, we all deserve to be destroyed for our sins. But an intercessor, Jesus Christ, intervened for us, just as Moses intervened and interceded for the Israelites back at that time. Well, why did God make this blessed and this valuable time holy? You know, Genesis 2 showed us that we're to rest on it. God made us need to rest from our work. Turn to Exodus 16, verse 23. Exodus 16, verse 23. And he said unto them, this is that which the Lord has said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which you will bake today. Seethe that you will seethe. And that which remaineth over, lay up for yourself to be kept until the morning. So he was giving specific instructions regarding the manna that God had provided for them as a way to live. In verse 24, and this was also what he was telling them to do in preparation for the Sabbath. And they laid it up till the morning as Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither was there any worm therein, so it didn't spoil. It wasn't starting to ferment, it wasn't starting to be corrupted in some way because of the elements. Verse 25, and Moses said, eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto the Lord. Today you shall not find it in the field. So you've gone out and you've gathered it the past 6 days, but don't bother to do it tomorrow because you're not going to find anything. It won't be there. And it came to pass, verse 27, that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. So there are always those few people who want to get something extra. They want to get, you know, that extra edge. They're going to gather a little bit more and maybe sell it to the Gentiles or maybe do something else with it. But God had designed the Sabbath so that there would be enough manna on Friday for that day and the Sabbath and no more. And as a result, verse 28, and the Lord said unto Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and keep my laws? And he was talking to him, not specifically Moses per se, but he was talking about the nation of Israel. See, for that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath, therefore he giveth you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide you every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. Don't go out and look for it, because there's not going to be any there. Verse 30, so the people rested on the seventh day. You know, there's a little bit of a difference between resting and not working. You know, God could command us to rest and not give a commandment about work and what would happen or what might happen. You know, on Sabbath morning, you'd sleep in and think, well, now I'm rested, so now I can go and do some work somewhere or go and have some fun somewhere. You know, go and play golf or something like that rather than going to church. I've rested, so, you know, what more is there to do? If he commanded us not to work but didn't tell us to rest, it'd just be the reverse of that. We'd stay up all night Friday night, you know, and we'd be so tired the next day that we wouldn't want to go to church or pray or study or do anything like that. So there has to be a difference between the two, and they both have to be included, which they were, in observing the Sabbath. You not only have to rest, but you are commanded not to work as well. Both of the purposes for the Sabbath must be observed. Exodus 16, verse 23, talks about seething and baking. Why were they mentioned? Strong's concordance for bake is H-644, spelled A-P-H-A-H, pronounced Afa. It's the Hebrew word for bake. Baking in Hebrew referred to baking of bread and cakes made with flour. This was a major part of the Israelite diet back at that time, as well as the people throughout the Middle East. Bread could easily be kept over 24 hours after baking without the necessity of having to bake more. So there would be no necessity if you bake bread, and this is apart from manna, if you bake bread later on, you could easily bake enough for 2 days. The word seeth, S-E-E-T-H-E, is Strong's 1310, is B-A-S-H-A-L, pronounced bashal in Hebrew, which means to boil or to cook. So the terms bake and boil in this verse are two very general terms in Hebrew for cooking, and were considered to be heavy labor at that time. And I will explain that as we go along. For one thing, seething and baking required longer lasting fires to be built. I mean, you couldn't just put together a little fire and bake something on it. And, you know, back then you couldn't just flip a switch like we can today and have, you know, instant heat or instant flame or instant warmth that could be used for that purpose. Fires took a long time to build. And once you got them started, you had to maintain them at a certain temperature. I mean, people don't tend to think about what they had to do in order to get their finished product. Gathering the wood for such fires was a job in itself. It required, you know, especially when they were in the wilderness, they had to walk long distances, perhaps, to find wood. It was very time-consuming. You know, often wood would have been scarce, so they had to go, as I said, long distance, and then find it and then carry it back. Even if one or two or two or three families got together and consolidated their efforts to do this so they could cook their meals, it still would have been work to cook food in this manner at that time. And so building of fires for cooking was not done on the Sabbath. In Exodus 35, verse 3, Exodus 35, verse 3. God instructs him. He says, you shall not kindle, or you shall kindle no fire throughout your habitations upon the Sabbath day. You know, here God emphasizes another type of work prohibited. And I was just describing the fires that were used to build and or built to cook food. They were also used for firing pottery, heating metal for instruments and that type of thing. And also, the fires were built to keep warm. However, the temperatures at night, while they might have been cool, as the sand lost its heat back at that time, after sunset, probably weren't extraordinarily cool so that people would need a fire to keep warm. I guess in thinking about if you carry it to our modern day, there are places on earth where because of the temperatures, and I can think of the Antarctic or the Arctic, or even, you know, further north at either extreme near the pole, South and North Pole, it probably is very, very cold. And so there they would have to have either something so totally well insulated that they didn't need a fire, or they would need a fire to keep from dying. So that might be an exception. But remember that work involves labor, it involves time, and anything that uses either on the Sabbath is a violation, because this is blessed and holy time, and God wants us not to be doing things of that nature, but using that time, doing things that are edifying, that are uplifting, that draw us near to Him to learn about His ways during the Sabbath, such as we're doing today. They're doing SQUIM today, in Tacoma today, and to all of the places around the world where God's people are meeting. The Sabbath should not be used for unnecessary or frivolous things. In Exodus 16, verse 4, then said the Lord unto Moses, Exodus 16, verse 4, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove or test them. That's what he was doing. Whether they will walk in my law or no. And that's why we've referred to the fourth commandment as the test commandment. God tested Israel with manna to see if they would obey him. And we see in verse 28, they failed the test. Verse 28. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? And he was here again referring to those people who went out to gather manna on the Sabbath when they were specifically told not to do it. How many of us have done things on the Sabbath and our conscience bothered us for doing them? I think everyone has experienced that. I don't think I'm alone in that. Turn to Isaiah 58, verse 13. Isaiah 58, verse 13. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and called the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord, honorable and shall honor him, not doing thy own ways, not finding thy own pleasure, nor speaking thy own words. You know, there are many points that are covered in that verse I just read, and every point you could spend a sermon or two just on that point alone. But I'd like to look at one word, and that's the word delight. Strong's H6027. That word means daintiness, exquisite delight. In the Greek Septuagint of the Old Testament, the Greek word is trumphera, T-R-U-P-H-E-R-A, meaning, there are two meanings listed. One, having been used to comfortable life and not prepared for harsh or rough lifestyle. That's what delight means. Or affording much pleasure, used of Sabbaths when one may refrain from physical work. So delight has a meaning that when you expand it and look at all of these things, it's very, very interesting. Do the adjectives related to the meaning of this word, exquisite, dainty, delicate, gentle, subdued, come to mind when we think about the Sabbath? Probably not. We probably, in the context of what we think the Sabbath is, probably don't think of that word delight and what it implies, what it means. It should give us a fresh perspective. Does the Sabbath give us intense satisfaction, intense joy, intense delight? If it doesn't, then maybe we need to have a little self-examination that's applied to our thinking. Exodus 31, verse 15. Exodus 31, verse 15. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever doeth any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Because it's holy time, we must follow his instructions of how we use it. It is God's gift to us. When he makes something holy, we must respect it, and we must treat it accordingly. Hebrews 10, verse 25. Hebrews 10, verse 25. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is. And back at that time, there were people that didn't view the Sabbath as being essential. I can skip church today. I don't really feel like going. It's not that important. And maybe they don't verbalize what I just said in that way, but that is their thought process based on their actions. But exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. And you better believe if you see the day approaching back at that time, it's so much more close to that now when you look around at what is going on in the world. And coming together to worship, we fellowship with those of like minds. God tells us to assemble together before him. That's specific instructions. You know, if there's not a church that's close to us, we may have to keep the Sabbath at home. For some, 100 miles is not too far, but for other, 5 miles or even 5 blocks may be too far, depending upon their physical condition. In the past, some families would travel 300 miles one way to go to Sabbath services until there was a church closer. Unfortunately, there are not that many that have to do that now. Some people are not able to attend for health reasons. Those living in third world countries, obviously, may not be able to go long distances because, or only go short distances because of bad roads or unreliable or costly transportation or civil unrest. And so they too have to keep the Sabbath at home. Our attitude and our desire to meet may have a lot to do with whether we attend services or not. You know, if we want to attend badly enough, we may find a way, barring any of the constraints I've already mentioned. Our attitude regarding and about the Sabbath shows God how important his relationship is to us. Exodus 31, verse 16. Exodus 31, 16. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations, for a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever, not just during the time they were wandering around in the wilderness, not until the time of Christ. That word forever means just what it says. It's a sign. 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. The Sabbath is a perpetual covenant. You know, what is a covenant? Well, it's a contract between two people or more. You do this, and if you do this, I'll do this. And so it's agreement, it's a contractual arrangement. So what's this contract with God say? Verse 17. It's a sign of who God is. You know, he's saying, you worship me because I'm the creator. And I might ask this question. Have you ever met an atheist who kept the Sabbath? You know, if we keep the Sabbath, we will believe in the only God, not any false gods. You won't find that happening. The seventh day rest is what we humans agree to do. This is our part of the agreement. We agree to keep the Sabbath as well as the other commandments and laws. And God says, and I, God, will agree to show you who I am. So if we want to know who God is, it's essential that we keep the Sabbath. In Exodus 31, Israel should have known who their God was, but of course they didn't keep the Sabbath, so in the very next chapter, in the very first few verses, you find them worshiping the story, or you find the story of the golden calf. And that's how quickly they were able to leave God's laws and his statutes and go out on their own because they didn't honor the Sabbath or the Sabbath covenant with him. They immediately went after other gods. In Hebrews 4, verse 9, Hebrews 4, verse 9, it says, "There remaineth therefore a rest to the people of God." That is an unclear translation of this verse and is assumed, often assumed by translators, to imply that the Sabbath has been done away with, it's been terminated, that you no longer have to keep it. Since Paul was writing Hebrews long after Jesus' death, mainstream Christianity does not want to accept what Paul was really saying in this verse in regard to the Sabbath. So translators believing the Sabbath was not in effect translate the Greek of this verse to show Paul really didn't mean to keep it. But Paul was still showing its relevance and requirement for Christians. You know, modern mainstream Christianity interprets this verse to mean that Christ has given believers spiritual rest, quote unquote. Not Sabbath rest, but spiritual rest. That is not a correct interpretation. When we understand the meaning of the Greek word used in Hebrews 4:9 for the word rest is G4520. If you look that up, sabbatismos. A keeping Sabbath is what it means. If we look in a lexicon for a definition of this Greek word, it is a Sabbath rest or a Sabbath observance. Paul used the word to the Hebrews, knowing full well that the Greek-speaking Hebrews and Jews, or I should say the Greek-speaking Jews and Christians of that day, knew exactly what it meant. He had no question of what it meant then, and it's the same thing today. And that is that it's keeping or it's observing the Sabbath day. You know, we might say that this verse could easily be translated as "there remains therefore a Sabbath keeping to the people of God." And that's what we're doing today. We're keeping the Sabbath. Going back to Isaiah 58:13-14. Isaiah 58:13-14. The phrase, "if you turn away your foot," in Hebrew is really more like "if you turn back your feet from," or "stop walking all over my holy time with your feet," which is what God is saying about the Sabbath day. We walk all over something that's precious and holy to God when we do our own pleasure on that day. He created it for man so that man would use it to interface with him. He wanted a relationship. He wanted a connection with man. And the Sabbath was designed to provide that chance for us to interface with him. After we're converted, we look at things differently than before. You know, an unconverted mind sees the Sabbath as a burden or drudgery. But as God opens our minds, as God expands our thinking through the, you know, through His Holy Spirit, we begin to see the Sabbath as a time of joy, as a time of pleasure, and we seek to build, or as we seek to build our relationship with Him. Isaiah 58, verse 13 to 14 should be the starting point in our beginning to see how to treat the Sabbath day. When our focus becomes knowing and loving God rather than other carnal pleasures, the Sabbath will bring us supreme joy. Some people never quite come to that place where they understand this and aren't able to live the Sabbath as the most pleasurable day of the week. And yet that's what God designed it to be. If we understand it correctly, if we keep it correctly. God created His church for many reasons. And one major one is so His people will gather together and on the Sabbath day to learn from Him. You know, there will always be people with health problems, with age problems, with physical difficulties who may not be able to attend regularly, but God understands that. He knows your situation. He knows your limitations. The Sabbath is a gift from God. He laid out its importance at the very beginning by observing it Himself. Someday, we will help teach the entire world all of the benefits of keeping the Sabbath as they finally come to know God and the truth about His marvelous plan for all of mankind.